Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's funny, I saw a thread on Twitter the other day from an Arsenal fan saying, we're probably the club with the best knee slides. And I was thinking, you know, Liverpool hoist up their European success. Manchester United, obviously, their dominance. Chelsea, of course, won the Champions League. Arsenal fans, we've got the best knee slides in the business.
They don't get to do that many of them.
Yeah, I was going to say.
In fairness, Aubameyang probably wouldn't have a bar of it either, would he?
No.
So, you know, pointless, really. Mustafi does the best knee slides. Liverpool not that happy about what happened in Madrid, and it's been such a long time since they've lost that we've almost forgotten that Jurgen Klopp, the Jurgen Klopp of the touchline at Napoli when he was with Dortmund, is not a happy loser. Of course, there's that classic phrase about, you know, show me a good loser and I'll show you a loser. But nevertheless, Liverpool's nose is way put out of joint by what happened in Madrid. But for those of us who watch Atletico on a regular basis, David, I don't know, I didn't see this coming. I didn't really think they had this sort of performance. Not just the grinta, but the discipline. Where did it come from?
I think the big occasion. I think galvanising themselves for the big occasion. I think the great thing about Atleti when they were at their peak of the powers was they would play a Tercera division, a third division team in Spain in the Cup, and have exactly the same approach as they would facing Juve in a Champions League semi-final. Yeah. Bayern, you know, and that isn't there right now. Their level only increases against the bigger teams. Even then, they still fall short. So this performance did come out of nowhere. You know, obviously, they still, you can't completely write them off. And I think Klopp was keen to do that before the game. But they
keen
went...
Keen to not write them off.
Yeah, and I think that was tactical on his part because I think he didn't want them to go into the game feeling like the underdog. And they did exactly that. Atleti are at their best when they are well and truly the underdog. Now, I brought this point up before, but I think they have an identity crisis. They don't know whether they're an elite side or whether they're an underdog side, like trying to fight the elite. And I think they went into this game written off so much.
So you think both the form and the current injuries kind of played for them in this situation?
Absolutely. I think they feed off things like that. They were looking at all the press before that and they thought, right, look, let's have one big performance. Let's write this off again, you know. And you saw the celebrations. You saw what it meant to the players as well. Robertson was criticising them full time about seeing the way they celebrated. The reason they celebrated like that is because it's been a long, long time since they had a performance like that. They were like, they were doubting themselves. That's another part of the problem is they have been doubting themselves. They won that game and after they thought, wow, we've still got it about us. We can still do this. We can still impact the elite. We can still rustle people. And my word, Liverpool have been rustled.
Now, we know the Wanda Metropolitano is a special place for Liverpool, of course, because they went and won the final there, and that was the first time they'd been back there since they won it. But is it on the road to becoming a special place for Atletico? I mean, you talked about the identity crisis. That has been part of the problem, because Simeone always, very self-consciously, when he talked them up before big European matches, he'd talk about how we're the guys from the barrio. We represent this area. We represent the working man. When you take them, 15 kilometres away to somewhere that's a beautiful facility but has absolutely nothing in common with the Calderon, apart from Atletico playing there and the seats being in red and white, that's something tricky. I mean, and it's interesting as well what Simeone was saying after the game. And I know it's just a great quote, but when he talks about how the bus came around the corner from the roundabout and they could see down, and, you know, everyone's seen the pictures on social media of all the fans with the red flares. And he said, that's the moment that I knew we'd won the game. And also Saul afterwards saying, you need these moments to make it from a good stadium to home.
Yeah.
Is this something that's going to help them make that transition?
I'm not too sure many clubs have actually taken to their new surroundings in the way that Atleti fans have. On a big night, the fans really, really get behind them, and the noise just really stays in, and please mind the pun because of the old stadium, but it is like a cauldron.
Yeah.
And the way Simeone whipped everybody up, I know he does this all the time, but like you said, I think he could sense something special. So he was a bit more animated than usual. And he really, really went into the fans, and the fans gave it back. And it created... And that was a big part of it. I know it's such a cliche line, you know, the fans, you know, won them the game. But, you know, they really pushed Atleti over the line.
I mean, they have gone big on drinks offers as well since they moved there. We have to say that too. But Saul, he's a player who's... I think he's a unique player, really, because you look at him and you think... If you go back to, as you say, Atleti's absolute pomp of a couple of years back, I think you look at him and he's the one guy in that side who both Barcelona and Real Madrid would unconditionally want.
I think he's technically gifted, and also he's a very, very intelligent player. Tactically, he's superb. That's why he plays in numerous positions. He's played at left back quite a lot. He's played right. He's played everywhere but goalkeeper. And I think if you told him, look, a black's out, you're going to have to go in goal, he'd be like, yeah, sure. And he'd probably give you a 7 out of 10. And
it would have been fine doing that on Tuesday.
Exactly, because Liverpool did absolutely nothing. Yeah, I think with Saul, it's also, you know, you speak to opponent fans and they're probably like, is he the one who has suffered the most under Simeone's system?
Yeah.
When he is liberated, he's such a different player. I remember watching him in the Euro under-21s. He was given a different role then, and he was more of just this roaming central midfielder. He joined the attack. He was a bit of a box-to-box type player, and he was fantastic, and he looked really, really happy. And I think I see him sometimes at Leti and he doesn't look happy, and I think he could potentially give a lot more in a different role, but he's just so happy to be that type of player, that general. I think since Gabby's left, they needed that general, and Saul is happy to be that general, assume that role.
I mean, you could say the same thing about Koke, really.
Yeah, Koke, absolutely.
There's been that instruction from the coaching staff that don't want him to run as much, because he's the one who's meant to have the clarity, isn't he, to make the passes.
When he was coming up, he was touted as being a Xavi type.
Yeah.
He was going to be the next, he was going to be Xavi's successor for Spain, and people say, yeah, he's going to go to Barcelona as well. But he's gone completely a different way in terms of the player that he is. He does so much running, he does so much hard work, instead of just sitting, maybe stringing the team together. He doesn't really do that. He's not that type of player. And I still don't think people truly understand that about Koke.
Yeah, that's true.
But are these not, both Saul and Koke are players who you look at and you think, actually, do you not think midfielders like that would actually want Atleti to play more expansively sometimes?
I think secretly a lot of the players do. And funnily enough, when Rodri moved to Manchester City, it was one of the first things he said when he moved. He said, look, and he told them privately as well, he wanted to play a different brand of football.
But what he can do is not valued at Atletico, is it?
No, absolutely not.
Like keeping like 86% of the ball or whatever.
Yeah, he just doesn't really fit. They're much better off with maybe a destroyer or that type of player, a stopper type player in midfield, whereas Rodri wants to use the ball, initiate moves.
I mean, you could argue that's kind of the wrong day and the wrong pod to have this discussion in, because they have just had this tremendous victory in Europe playing proper Simeone football.
Yeah.
But you still look at this squad and this identity crisis you mentioned, like they've spent a lot of money now.
Yeah.
Like it's weird to sit there with like Tom Alomar, who they spent a lot of money on, Joao Felix when he's fit, they spent a ton of money on. Diego Costa was a weirdly expensive deal for them.
Yep.
Morata's not going to come free. Like they've spent proper money, And this idea that they have to graft their way to the top just isn't valid anymore because they can afford to sign top tier talent.
I think really this kind of gives them the excuse though, doesn't it? Playing against Liverpool. It's not just the current injuries and stuff, but I don't see how people can get stuck into them over this because
like
if you beat Liverpool, you beat Liverpool. It doesn't matter how you do it, exactly. Right? They're the best team in Europe.
Yeah, and they were largely positive. They had other chances that game. They could have scored more. You know, they weren't completely parking the bus. They defended well. They defended in units, and I know people will take screen grabs and say, oh, look at how many people Atleti had behind the ball. What do you expect? They're going to when they don't have the ball. Mm. But they did attack. They did look to score more goals, and they could have had more.
They started with Tom Alomar on the wing. I mean, that's not something they do every game anymore, and Simeone's playing him up front a few times. He's going through the full Ferreira Carrasco, which is sort of Simeone initially doesn't fully trust him to play on the wing, really.
Exactly. I remember a Copa del Rey game, and Carrasco didn't track back, or he gave up halfway through when he thought that, I think he was only sprinting against Ever Banega, who is hardly the quickest of players, and apparently that was the moment that Simeone like just lost and said, right, I want him out. He's been here 2 years now. He doesn't understand what I want.
Yeah.
Well, you know, at least he didn't end up in an Arda Turan situation. All's well that ends well for Carrasco, and I'm sure it will for the rest of the season. Let's go over to Dortmund. I was there on Tuesday night, and funnily enough, when we talk about Atletico smothering prodigious attacking teams in numbers, Dortmund did that. We'll come back to how Dortmund dealt with PSG in a moment, but there's only one possible headline. You're in the room. I don't want you to smother me, so take it away.
Yeah, indeed. We can play the whole... I've saved this because I might want it for ringtone purposes. See, there we go. You repeat that over and over.
The net it's rattle is special, isn't
the
it?
The net rattle is very good. And there's something very satisfying about watching someone just hit the ball as hard as they can for it then to go in the top corner is very good. But it was an interesting performance from Haaland in the sense that he wasn't that good for a lot of the game, which is an absurd thing to say when you've scored two goals in the Champions League round of 16 game against PSG, but it is nonetheless true. I mean, you were there. I'm sure you'll have seen it. Because, I mean, he is still, as bizarre as it may sound, he is still a work in progress in a lot of ways.
And he's learning to play with a new team. I mean, when you see that intuitive relationship between Sancho, Hakimi, Hazard, he's not there yet. He doesn't quite know where to put himself. And, of course, when you're a striker, if you're scoring goals, never mind that many goals, it does paper over the cracks. Mm. People don't actually look at what you're doing if you're scoring goals.
Well, it's an odd one because there's the old cliche that putting the ball in the net is the hardest thing in football. You know, I'm not sure that's always true, but it's certainly there's a reason why strikers go for a lot of money. Like consistent goal scorers are one of the most highly priced assets in the game. But you can also, as a striker, you don't actually have to be great at the football. There are certain qualities you have to have. And if you look at Haaland, I mean, he's obviously freakish physique. And the fact that he's got the size and the pace. I mean you'll have seen the memes already of that massive run he made. He combines that with some pretty smart movements around the box. You'll notice whenever someone puts a shot in, he's moving, sort of sniffing the spill from the goalkeeper before it happens. It's a sort of a striker thing. You should go for a possible rebound, not for the rebound. And he does that very consistently, which I think for a young man is impressive. And of course, he's a good finisher when he gets the chance. Now, there's a lot that needs to get better with his game, but I think he's still really hard to stop. I mean, We talk about this run. Obviously, we've spoken a lot about his father, inevitably.
Yeah.
But his mom was also a Norwegian septathlon champion.
Right, okay.
Which is the sort of athletics event. Off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure the septathlon is...
I'm going to say there are seven events involved in
it. Well, yeah, Andy, that's very good. I think it's a 200-meter sprint. It's a 100-meter hurdles.
Okay.
I think it's an 800-meter. And then it's the shot put, the long jump and the high jump. I'm pretty sure that is it. And so, I mean, to be very good at that, you have to have quite a rounded sort of physique, I suppose.
Well, what I find interesting about him is he's very, very graceful. I think difficult to take in about Haaland, and I guess it must be different for him as well because he's had that growth boost. I mean, David, I sort of compared him to Kevin Durant, the one of the greatest basketball players on the planet. Someone who was 6'2" until he was 18, mm-hmm. and then ended up being, what, 6'9". And so Haaland is similar after that growth spurt, I think, because he's got all the skills of a smaller guy. And I think really the way he plays isn't like a target man type striker at all, is it? But yet he's got the size where people find him very difficult to deal with. I mean, you know, we've talked about that sprint. I don't think it's just the speed, Lars. I think it's the fact that when you see him move, and I've seen him in the flesh quite a few times now, he's not busting a blood vessel to make those runs. He's almost got a similar grace to Thierry Henry. You know how Thierry Henry, I'm not saying he's quite as fast.
He strides.
Yeah, he like glides across the pitch.
And there's something slightly freakish about watching that large an object move at that speed.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's like when you're at the airport and like the A380s take off, it's like this thing looks too big to be in the air. Like the physics of it is really hard to calculate in your head. It's the similar stuff with Haaland. I have sneakily looked this up, by the way. It's the heptathlon. I got confused because of the seven, because it's seven, and in Norway we call it Sjukamp, which is a much better name for it anyway.
Much better.
Yeah. But yeah, that's what his mum was really good at. So yeah, good genes all around.
Of course, Eden Hazard's mum was better at football than his dad was.
Oh.
And the first goal he scored, she always says, is when he was like, I don't know, 4 months off being born, because she scored a goal when she was pregnant with him. More than one goal, I think. She was a good player.
Sander Berge, Sheffield United recruit Sander Berge. Both his parents were international standard basketball players.
Is that right?
Yep.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. So how did he end up playing for Sheffield United then?
But he's not quite as tall as his brother. His brother plays basketball. He's even taller than Sander Berge. He's the small one.
Interesting. I'm sure Thomas Tuchel would be happy for us to talk about basketball.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the outcome he would have wanted. Yeah.
But David, he's been compared to Pep Guardiola so many times. Mm-hmm. Did he do a Guardiola and overthink it by going three at the back?
I think some of these coaches who pin themselves up as philosophers, or who the media or the fans, whoever pins them as philosophers, I think sometimes they read up to that too much and they play up to that. You know, we've seen Guardiola over the years come into a Champions League game, make an inexplicable decision, whether, you know, put somebody at left back or change the system. And I think Tuchel did exactly the same. He's worked on a particular style for several months now. And then for their biggest game of the season, arguably, he goes and rips it up.
And he's been and done this before, hasn't he? I think if you go back to the first season at Dortmund, when they're unbeaten, they're top of the league, mm-hmm. they go away to Bayern, he switches to three at the back and they get absolutely hammered 5-1. Mm-hmm. And it's remarkable to me how you get top-level coaches, elite coaches, who have these, we talked about it on Jules and Andy a couple of weeks back, these sort of repetitive patterns of behaviour.
But he justified this change in system, and I couldn't believe this. He said, oh, it worked against Dijon. I was like, what? Did I see that right?
No, but I think tactically you can look at it and think, if your fullbacks are, Meunier is okay, I guess, but like Kurzawa on the left flank there, and you know, like Kurzawa defending against a right flank of Hakimi and Sancho, if you're a coach, that makes you worried, right? That's not a bizarro thing to think that actually...
Does that explain the change? He wants a bit
of extra
help.
Well, this is what I'm thinking, yeah. If you add another centre-half to the mix, basically, and say Kurzawa, the whole defending thing, we'll try to help you out with that, because you're clearly, that's not what you're good at. Mm. I mean, there is a certain logic there, but you're right, like, changing formation for a game like this is dicey.
And I think there was confusion in the middle. I think it was the midfield in the centre where they lost it the most. I think there was such the level of confusion there between Verratti and Gay was just incredible.
I mean, it's funny because that feels like one of the big areas of progress that they've made.
Yeah.
So do you think taking Marquinhos out sort of muddies the waters a little bit?
Absolutely. They should have kept that, and then you've got this nice nucleus there, and I think Verratti and Gay, they know that Marquinhos is always going to be there behind them. Yeah. He's going to be picking the ball up off the defence. He's also going to be moving it into them. Whereas it looked like Gay and Verratti were looking at each other kind of like, all right, who stays? Who goes? Who's collecting here? Who's joining the attack here? And it just, and then Neymar was dropping back in this sort of quarterback role. He was flicking these little fiddly passes over the top of the defence, and it just all looked very confused and too many people in the middle in the end.
Is that testament to how well Dortmund's back three worked, that Neymar had to go deeper to find the ball?
I think don't get me wrong, I think Dortmund did well, but I think PSG were masters of their own doing.
Yeah.
Really. Again, I don't want to take anything away from Dortmund. They were spectacular to watch when they come forward. But I think PSG, again, created a lot of problems for themselves.
And they really bossed it in midfield as well, yeah. Dortmund, didn't yeah. they? Emre Can
really proving his worth there, because that has been an issue with Dortmund this season. I mean, they've been a little bit unbalanced. And when you go into the season with like Axel Witsel as the most defensive of your midfielders, it's not ideal, because he's not exactly David Batty, is he?
Well, they were superly reliant on him.
Yeah,
great comparison.
He's not David Batty, crucially. If I was making a comparison, I would be insane. But adding someone who's a little bit more defensively minded next to him, I think, is very clever, because it frees Witsel up a little bit as well. And I wonder if Thomas Delaney's injury absence has been an issue there, because he's someone who also gets around the pitch in a sort of slightly more defensive-y type way. But anyway, they did look a lot more solid. And I thought, to be honest, I thought the first half of this game, I'd flag this up as one where you had to like bring your abacus and all this sort of thing, but it felt a little bit like, I mean, PSG know this doubleheader is their season, right? If they go out now, their season is over. Dortmund know that their defense is a bit bad, and you're coming up against Neymar and Mbappe. So they did look a little bit cautious, I think, for large parts of the game. Two teams that were a little bit afraid of cocking up, I thought, watching it on the TV anyway. Did you get that sense in the stadium?
Yeah, I think I did, actually. It was a lot more cagey than you expected. And Dortmund, I think they had in their mind, I mean, you know, we go back and think of when Mbappe last played at Westfalen. It was in 2017. It was the day after the bus attack, of course, and whether that game should have gone ahead, of course, it was totally overshadowed by that. But I think you look at the way that Mbappe profited from a high line there and a few defensive gremlins. They were determined for not to happen to them again, so they dropped. But you talked about Paris being overcautious. I think it's very interesting. This time last year, or slightly later than this time last year, Thomas Tuchel was throwing his players under the bus and saying, this always happens to you, it's nothing to do with me. This time, Tuchel and Neymar joined forces to throw PSG's medical staff under the bus, because Neymar came out afterwards and dropped his little bomb of saying, well, look, I've been fit to play for the last four games. It's been tough not to play for the last four games and to come out. And of course, the club was scared that I would get injured, but I've got no rhythm when I come out for this game. I mean, could we see the fact that quite a few of those PSG players were lacking a bit of rhythm?
Yeah. I think that was another factor as well. But I think it's just the deflection tactic from the fact that I think Tuchel actually messed up in that game big. And I think that I'm not surprised that he wanted to say that and target other people, other things. It's, you know, like you said, he's targeted his own players in the past before, to his detriment.
And of course, talking is not really working out for them, is it? Because Marco Verratti again has got himself suspended for the second game, but for back chat.
That is Verratti gone a Verratti, yeah, I think.
But this is a problem.
For sure.
This is a problem he's never, ever gotten over. He does this every year. You keep hearing about, Verratti's really matured this year. And then he goes in a big game, he goes and does something. And he might not play again now for the rest of in the Champions League this season.
Lars, is it worse to do what Verratti does, which, as you say, is exactly what it says on the tin, or Meunier, who's suspended for the second game, having not realised he was on the booking going into this one?
That's not ideal.
At least he's got an excuse.
Where was Shreves? Had Shreves in a half-time, just sort of reminding him. But no, Andy, again, not to lean too hard into this, but working at the game, I want to know who threw the medical staff under the bus first? Was it Neymar or was it Tuchel? Because that's kind of interesting to me.
Tuchel before the game.
Okay.
Neymar really? Afterwards.
Because when you said, I hadn't noticed that Tuchel also joined in with that criticism, so I kind of assumed that was...
Well, he put it a different way. He's like, well, I would have loved to play him against Lyon a couple of weeks ago, but the medical staff said no, so it's a no.
Yeah, okay. But it makes sense for him anyway.
It's not quite Pep and Müller Wohlfahrt anyway,
no,
but
exactly,
you know,
exactly.
He does like to stand on the shoulder of giants, that's for sure.
A punta completamente, va Xavi, remate, gol, 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 Puyol, 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 que besa el brazalete, Capitán Puyol!
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Now, Haaland famously didn't go to Leipzig last because he was told he wouldn't get a game. I'm sure that's not the only reason.
Not entirely like that.
I think he would have Jose Mourinho in his corner because Mourinho was moaning afterwards about the strength in depth that Leipzig have. Whether Mourinho is entirely justified in that extraordinary rant is a different question, and we'll get to medical jokers now. One's not available to Spurs in a little bit.
Medical joker, such a funny term. I know we'll get into it later, but it's a great word. It reminds me of...
It is brilliant.
You know, when Inter a few years ago had like a complete striker crisis outside of the transfer window. They had like no forwards, so they were just looking around for a striker with a pulse, and they brought in John Carew on a trial. Now, Carew, who had been released from West Ham a few months earlier,
was
brought in for a trial. He was going to train with them for a bit, didn't get past the medical. They had him on the medical and they thought, actually, John, you know, we might not do this.
Is that right?
A medical joker.
Cool, because for a minute, I was a bit concerned when you started that story that you were going to say either Roy Essendon or Chef Kikuchi. And you didn't say either of those. So I feel pretty happy. But in terms of organising what you actually do have, I mean, Leipzig have a lot of injuries of their own. What, they were down to Ethan Ampadu and two fullbacks as their back three.
That's what I was thinking, like, when Mourinho was making his complaints, as you'd expect him to make after losing a game, Leipzig had basically no centre halves. Well, with apologies to Ethan Ampadu, who's very, very promising, but he hasn't played a lot this season.
Well, you could see that he was on his arse by the end.
Exactly right, and the rest of them were sort of fullbacks filling in, and it was a really bad situation for them as well. I think, put it this way, if Mourinho was in charge of a team that had Konate and Upamecano out, we would not hear the end of it.
No, that is absolutely true. But talking of the comparison between Mourinho and Nagelsmann, David, our friend Miguel Delaney wrote something for The Independent today where it went with a great line, Football 2004 versus Football 2020. How much does that say of it? And can we take Jose Mourinho seriously in the Champions League knockouts anymore?
Absolutely not. I don't think so. I think for quite some time now, it's been fairly evident that Mourinho isn't on that top level anymore. I don't think he's progressed as a coach. I think last night was further evidence to that. Yes, he had his injuries, but it was still the same old Mourinho way. I think, you know, you're at home, you're against the Leipzig side with obviously the problems that we've just mentioned, and the fact that they're new to this competition and these surroundings. There wasn't much sign of experience or nous there from Spurs. And I think Mourinho has to instill that. If there's something he's going to instill, I think if tactically he isn't going to be a threat anymore, then he at least has to use his experience, his nous. And he didn't do that. I think a lot more could have been done.
what could they have done a bit better? I mean, we look at Spurs last year, and you know, they pressed on Dortmund a little bit more. Is this something that would have worked with Leipzig with their difficulties at the back? I mean, you know, we talk about how Spurs are light up front, but there's no doubt that players like Lucas, Bergwijn, to a lesser extent, Dele Alli. And I think, you know, people have talked about Dele Alli, and I'm sure the Ramble boys will get onto it tomorrow. But he, to me, seemed a little bit lost by the way Mourinho had set up tactically, and a little bit wasted. But there's no doubt, for whatever you think about Bergwijn, who has played as a centre forward quite a lot this season for PSV, and Lucas chasing long balls, they can definitely press those defenders, can't
exactly.
They
can. They can play more expansively. They can play a different way. Look, he wasn't. The people are acting like he was putting the reserves out. There wasn't. That was still a decent side what he put out. No, it's a good side.
It cost
side.
A lot of money.
Yeah, it was a good side that cost a lot of money out there. And a lot more could have always been done. It's easy to say you don't have this, you don't have that. You make, you know, people do more with, you know, with less resources. Put it that way. They could have played far more expansively. And like you say, the style of football. You mentioned about the long balls to those players. Why? This is what I mean about being archaic, about him not progressing as a coach. He could have played a different way, but I don't think he's got that other way of playing.
But what about Nagelsmann? I mean, you can see someone who not only has a tactical plan, Lars, but someone who has a discernible effect on individual players that he coaches. I mean, Patrick Schick, for example, is a great example. He was terrific in the first half, especially.
Yeah, and I thought that was a big call, starting with him over Yusuf Poulsen, who's a more experienced player and a guy who's more used to being the foil for Timo Werner there, but Schick was very, very good.
They click quite nicely, don't they?
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting watching Angelino, who's been there for about 5 minutes and who looked like fully integrated into the team, like he knew his job, like he knew where his teammates were.
Considering they've got a very specific way of playing, you know, there's probably a lot to take. Like you say, he's undertaken that.
I thought that was quite remarkable. And, you know, not to go too much on about Tottenham, but I think they've got quite a mobile back line, Tottenham. There's not a lot of slow guys there. Like Davies, Alderweireld can still run a bit. Sanchez is quick and Aurier is quick. Mm. They don't have midfielders like when they're starting with Winks and Lo Celso in the middle. They don't really have guys who are great at harrying and kicking people. I'm not sure sitting deep is the most sensible. That's the obvious call here. Surely you'd like to have a bit of possession with these guys.
Did Sabitzer look like the best midfielder in this game?
Well, yes, you can for sure. I'd say that, and I guess what Mourinho will have been worried about is having Nkunku and Werner running at you. I mean, that's not exactly where you want to be. But
I was about to say, I think he was the best midfielder by far. But he knew his role. He knew exactly what Nagelsmann played to the strengths of the players that he had. Mourinho didn't, put it that way. I think, like you say, you make a great point. You know, you've got those sort of players. You're playing Winks and Lo Celso, then you should have played more expansively. You should have played more positively.
But there was that adaptability, wasn't there, as well? And whether that's on Nagelsmann personally or how he drilled the players. Because when Tottenham were putting the pressure on in the closing stage of the game, they did switch quite discernibly Leipzig from 3 to 5, didn't they? Mm-hmm. And you saw that with Angelino, who was brilliant coming forward, and Mukiele, who's also got that side to their game. They could defend as well.
Yeah.
Couldn't they?
And that's what the best managers do. You coach your team to make it adaptable, to be it flexible. This is why I'm saying Mourinho is no longer in the top rung of managers, because his teams don't play that way anymore. They're not flexible nor adaptable. Do you think he'll make an excuse, a player hasn't been here long, he doesn't really know the system yet? Nagelsmann's not going to say that, like you say about Angelino. Like, he comes in, he learns, and this is the difference right now.
The only thing I would say about Mourinho is that, without wanting to come over all Jonathan Wilson here, I mean, tactics are cyclical, right? Mm. I mean, one tactical trend always happens as a reaction to another, and with the sort of high press being very much the style preferred by most of the top teams, I do wonder if the sort of slightly more direct long ball teams will make a resurgence at some point, because I mean, that is a logical evolution of that. If a lot of good teams press high and make it hard for you to play out from the back and make it hard for you to build your play, the logical counter move is to just play the ball over the press.
Largely what Leicester did in the Premier
League? So maybe it's like my beard, sort of like it was trendy, then it went completely out of style and I didn't change it because I'm just lazy, and then it became trendy again. So maybe that will be the Mourinho thing. Maybe his tactics will become efficient once more.
Mejor jugador del planeta, gol del mejor equipo del mundo, gol del líder de la liga.
One guy who's definitely on top of his game, on top of his coaching game, is Giampiero Gasperini.
Oh, my God.
He had his own defensive issues this week for the game against Valencia, with Vedat Jimsiti pulling out in the minutes before the game after picking up an injury in the warm-up. So the returned Mattia Caldara had to do his warm-up during the game. I mean, David, if you're going to do your warming up during the game, I mean, the coach is telling you, let's play the game at the other end so Mattia can get loose.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what Atalanta did, conforming to type. How is it that, especially after such a poor start to their Champions League campaign, well, certainly in terms of results, I think that the content was there in terms of performances, mm-hmm. All of a sudden they're doing exactly what they do in Serie A in the Champions League. How much of that is down to Atalanta and how much of that is down to Valencia?
I think a lot has to do with Atalanta. I'm not going to take anything away from this performance. It was very bold, bright. It was refreshing. It was nice to see. They are a team, Gasperini is a coach that, you know, focuses on his team first and foremost. He doesn't look at the opposition. He plays to, you know, that's I think that's how you should go about things. You know, I think a lot of managers become too bogged down with what the opponent is doing.
It's how big teams play, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they're becoming a big team. I mean, for me, I had the feeling that this is a team, and it's not just because they beat Roma earlier mm-hmm. in the week, so now they're 6 points clear of Roma in fourth place in Serie A. Mm-hmm. I have the feeling this is a team that we're going to see again and again and again in the Champions League.
They're going to rattle a lot of teams. You know, some teams rattle others by playing defensively, like we spoke about with Atleti. Other teams play because they just don't have any fear. They have nothing to lose, really. Atlanta's in this competition. They've come into it with such a great attitude. They'll probably see off Valencia, I think. And they'll go on, and you know, not many teams will want to play them. I know it'll be the, oh, they leave gaps, and they do. Valencia had their chances as well, but nobody will want to play Atlanta because of the way the freedom with their player with the movement was fantastic. I think it's such a basic principle when you have passed the ball to always move and make sure that you leave a space, you know, to receive the ball back again or to create an angle for a teammate. And that was the primary reason for them winning that game last night. They created space out of nowhere.
44,000 fans coming over from Bergamo to San Siro, which I think roughly equates to a third of the population of Bergamo. Good night for house burglars in Bergamo.
The Bergamo
possibly.
Crew, all really wealthy today. But I just think it's with Atlanta. So there is this annoying phrase in football marketing that I think is starting to see more and more, which is this sort of, we don't buy superstars, we make them. And it's something Wenger once said. You know, Dortmund had this, they put this on their social media account with Erling Haaland, which I think was like, guys, you bought him like a few weeks ago. And Liverpool have said that as well, in spite of their spending record being quite formidable. But look at Atalanta, and like you have this, I mean, you could call it a midfield four if you want, even if they're wing backs. You have like Gosens, Remo Freuler, Martin Deron and Hattebor. Like that's a team that's not really bought superstars but are making them. This is a squad of players who are, you know, a lot of these guys were not a very, very, very big reputation when they came into that. But
it's not making them, it's remaking them, isn't
well,
it?
Well, in the case of like Ilicic and Papu yeah. Gomez, these sort of guys yeah. Who just in the system that Gasperini plays is thriving. And I think there's a comparison to in a sense to what Sheffield United are doing, in the sense that I just think that the shape Atalanta play in just catch teams a little bit off guard. It's just players turn up in areas where you don't really expect them to be.
It's that movement, yeah, yeah. The movement is just remarkable when you the way you see each other looking about. I know it sounds such a basic thing. Okay, everybody passes and moves, but they don't. I think a lot of teams are very static these days, and they don't think about that level.
It's interesting as well. I was thinking with that first Ilicic goal. But the second goal, wasn't it? If you're a defensive coach or a defender who's a pundit, you're saying to, I think it was Mangala who's on him, who didn't obviously have the best game, see him onto his right foot, see him onto his right foot. Well, they did see him onto his right foot, and it didn't really work out.
No.
But I know you've been quite critical of Albert Thelades, David. He didn't really help his team here, did he?
No, I mean, I have been for a number of years, even when he was with Spain under 21 and he had success with them. He was pinned up by such a magnificent generation that consisted of Asensio, Ceballos,
yeah.
and several. He had Saúl as well, who we've also discussed. He doesn't strike me as a great tactician nor motivator. And I think he's very much pinned up by the individuals that he has. And I think he relies very heavily, I think, in this Valencia side on Parejo, for instance. And I think if he doesn't work, then that's when they look out of sorts. For instance, Gonçalo Guedes hasn't kicked on at all under him. He seems to be really, really struggling.
Well, that's right. When he arrived for that first half season, he was absolutely fantastic. Yep. They were talking about PSG maybe wanting to hold on to him so they could sell him directly to Barcelona or Real Madrid because yep. he was making that much of an impression in La Liga. I mean, as you say, he had his little moments last night, but the match stats are quite misleading, aren't they?
Yeah,
because
I think so.
Most of those chances against Atalanta were when they were 4-0 up already, weren't
yeah,
they?
And even then, this is the thing, when they were 4-0 up, Atalanta were still looking for more goals. They took off a centre-back in the 75th minute, put a striker on. They wanted to get six. They could see there was an opportunity to get maybe five, six goals here.
Well, they looked pissed off at the end, didn't they?
Absolutely. You had
Gallini, the goalkeeper, having a go at the other stuff.
Yep.
That all looked fairly glum, considering it was like probably one of the best nights in the history of the club.
Absolutely. And then Valencia's chances arrive purely because Atalanta do leave gaps. And that's just how it is. Valencia weren't exactly cutting Atalanta open. You know, that wasn't the case at all. And Gasperini is well aware that they're going to leave gaps in there, but Valencia didn't profit for them, and that's how you go.
You know where we lead the way from other pods? It's that we do the unexpected. So we're going to go with a transfer news section.
No,
but it's all down.
You think my John Carew anecdote was an unexpected departure? Didn't expect Carew to pop up this week.
Well, we're able to, thanks to the Scandinavians, yep. Lars, not just you. You can't take all the credit because Martin Brathwaite is off to Barcelona. You know what?
That's a surprise to him as well, to be honest.
I think it is. Well, Barcelona are taking up the Leganés strikers' 18 million buyout clause. They're able to do this outside the transfer window because, David, we're going to have a brief explainer because the medical joker, as we were talking about earlier, it's the French phrase.
It's an inherently funny phrase.
You play your joker because if a player is the victim of long-term injury, like Moussa Dembélé has been, it means you can bring in someone from, in this case, Spain,
yep.
the same country, or a free agent outside the transfer window. You can always bring out in free agents outside the transfer window, of course. Now, this is not a situation that, as some have suggested, is biased in favour of Barcelona.
No,
because other teams in the league have already done this season. Yep. Other teams in La Liga have already
and
done
Valencia,
this season.
We might have another case. Valencia are also considering it to replace Garay, who is now out for 5 to 6 months. So they're looking at that situation as well.
Oh, I can't wait to see who's going to suffer. God, I hope they don't go to Leganés for a centre-back. I suppose that's fairly unlikely, isn't it? But that would be really, really harsh.
What's the release clause for the Getafe guys? That would be funny.
Yeah, quite cheap.
Yeah. I mean, in terms of like, you can use your medical joker, trigger the release clause of a centre-half of a direct competitor in the Champions League race.
You're an evil man. Yeah. of course, Espanyol have already taken away Leandro Cabrera by paying his buyout clause, and that's something that's helped to transform Espanyol's fortunes in this. You know, they're back in the race to stay up. That was actually in the transfer window. Mm-hmm. I mean, tell us how the Brathwaite thing went down, David, because him and Barcelona have been speaking since the closing days of the transfer window. So this is something that's surprising to a lot of people, but it's not come out of the blue for Brathwaite himself.
No, absolutely not. And Kike Setién requested Brathwaite particularly as well. He wanted somebody a bit more physical in attack. I think that a few people at Barcelona were insisting on Angel from Getafe.
Another cheap buyout clause?
Another cheap buyout clause. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ruin their season, why not? So it's come about like this in terms of... it's. Yeah, like people have to understand this rule does exist because I wish I had a really, really good explanation of this, but other than Spain is different. And that's pretty much why.
I mean, what makes it different as compared to France and its situation with medical jokers is there is a buyout clause. So Leganés, and not all players have buyout clauses, and Leganés, just like they were in transfer window with En-Nesyri, who ended up going off to Sevilla for 20 million, they are not in a position to refuse. That's what leaves Leganés in such a vulnerable position.
Yep.
They've lost two of their front players and they're not allowed to replace outside of transfer
window. Exactly. And then they're not in a position to get, you know, to say no to those offers. Even if an offer did arrive, that, you know, that these clubs need that money in to come on to survive as well. And so they're going to take this risk now is, you know, that they can potentially stay up, you know, without those strikers that, you know, that they their main strikers they had. And it's a sad situation for Leganés. It really, really is. And it's a silly rule and it should be done away with immediately, because it can destroy their season.
How would you adjust it? Just you're only able to sign free agents out of transfer window?
I just don't think this rule should exist. You should not exist. You shouldn't be allowed to sign free transfer players either. You should go from maybe your reserves. It's a better squad planning. Leganés are suffering because of Barcelona's poor squad planning. Barcelona got rid of strikers. Abel Ruiz, who was a big talent in there, you know, he's gone out to Braga on loan. So why didn't they keep him? You know, Carles Perez, who went to Roma as well. So their planning should have been better. And Leganés are suffering for it. And I think that's the saddest thing above all.
No, the same thing. I think if you're going to have that rule, having the rule is not a huge problem in itself, but having that and release clauses is a problem.
It's the combination, isn't it?
It's if Leganés was like, all right, we'll take the money, fair enough, but you're not giving them a choice.
Yeah.
And last thing I read was that they'd applied if they could be able to replace him, and the Spanish FA have apparently turned them down. But it does leave them in a hopeless position, because maybe there are clubs out there who would be happy to sell them a striker, but you know.
Not many. I think it creates such a dangerous precedent, like I said to you before we came on, you know, what happens then? The Leganés go, all right, Cadiz, we want to take your main striker, and Cadiz are currently fighting to get promotion. And then where do Cadiz go after that? They maybe go and play, and it's a vicious cycle, and it could go on and on, quite frankly, with no end. And it could end up being ridiculous, which would suit Spanish football very, very well.
Well, either way, I would like to, just on Barcelona's behalf, retort to the idea of poor planning and the like in the week that President Bartomeu was revealed to, which he has denied, had a social media campaign in his favour, which tore off Messi and Piqué and other players. Leo Messi has come out and said it's very strange. It's not the strangest thing that's happened at Barcelona at a board level, is it?
Absolutely not. I mean, as a club from top to bottom, they are well and truly in the mud. It's very strange to see Barcelona, a club that have such a clear philosophy, or used to have such a clear philosophy, be, you know, they're being operated in this manner right now by Bartomeu and his burner accounts on Twitter. And a little Kevin Durant nod there. It's just really, really bizarre goings on. And it's so far removed, of this Cruyff philosophy of everything that's been put in place at Barcelona, I think. And it's been gradually ripped up piece by piece.
I would love to think that Bartomeu is sitting there in his office with his feet on the table going, yeah, I'm Kevin Durant, check me out.
Goal, 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 goal!
Right, games of the week. What have we got, fellas?
Well,
I do have one, but I don't want to go first.
No, I'll go first.
Okay.
In danger of becoming typecast on the Football Ramble, I've gone for another Getafe game.
Yeah.
It had to be done. So I'm a proponent of shithousery, so you know I've got to back the pioneers in this.
It's all about promoting your personal brand these days, isn't it?
Exactly. I'm sitting here with a Sergio Ramos coaster, with a player on the floor in agony.
On brand.
Yeah, clearly.
On brand.
Yeah, yeah. After he's clearly Polak'd somebody. Anyway. Getafe Sevilla in a battle at the top of La Liga. I think it's made interesting by the fact that both have got Europa League commitments. So it'll be interesting to see who's got the squad depth, what changes are made. And I think this is going to be a really, really tough game for both sides coming off the back of those European games and dealing with the pressure at the top of La Liga. And it's a new position for Getafe to be in as well. So it'll be interesting to see how they come off the back of a Europa League game against Ajax as well. A clash of styles there, if there ever was one.
You could say. Where and when can people watch it?
That will be on Premier Sports, I think it is. Sorry, I always get mixed up with La Liga these days in terms of the rights, because they're just everywhere. But yes, it's Premier Sports. That'll be on Sunday afternoon.
I might see if I can watch this just for a chance to watch Jorge Molina again, who is 105 years old, who is still having this extraordinary run as scoring goals for Getafe.
Yeah, it's a renaissance of sorts. 55 goals he scored in La Liga. 50 of them have come since turning 30.
Wow.
Yeah, which is ridiculous.
Incredible.
If we were using a verb, would we say he'd adderist it? We would, wouldn't we?
We might.
We'll move on from that poor use of language. Lars, please.
So I'm going to go slightly left field with this, in the sense that we often pick like the biggest teams against each other or the spiciest derby. On Friday night, I want to, well, private life permitting, I desperately want to watch I want to watch Real Betis versus Mallorca. And the reason for this is, first of all, you should always watch Betis. Fekir is back from suspension. I'm sure he has a point to prove, or maybe he'll get it, talk himself off the pitch again. We'll see. Exciting times. But no, I'm intrigued by Mallorca's tireless quest for some sort of result away from home. You rarely see this, that we get into we're almost into March now, and Mallorca have yet to win away from home. They've played 11 games away from home in La Liga. They've picked up 1 point from those 11. This is a truly rubbish record on the league, on the road. They have another chance here, going to Seville, playing against Betis. We'll see if they can do it this time.
Nice. Well, you know what? I'm going to go for a derby anyway. And there's a good Bundesliga Zwei derby, which is on Saturday, midday. So you'll probably just be crawling out of bread and having a toasted sandwich, I would imagine. Not that I'm assuming anything about you listeners.
Having a hangover from the Betis Mallorca.
That's going to be a wild night.
Fireworks.
Especially if Fekir gets it going. 12 midday. On Saturday, it's on BT Sport, Hamburg versus St. Pauli.
Very good.
And St. Pauli beat Hamburg at Millantor in the reverse fixture back in autumn for the first time in a very, very long time. It was first time in a couple of decades at Millantor. They've since beaten them on the road at Volksparkstadion. Last time they were up in a top flight, actually. And that bizarrely, which came at about the same time of the season, had a really adverse effect, because when Gerald Asamoah scored that goal and they won at Volkspark, St. Pauli, they spent so long celebrating it that they essentially got themselves relegated afterwards. So the same thing could happen this season, but they would end up in the dritter, in the third tier, which would be pretty terrible, because they're battling against relegation, and Hamburg obviously at their second attempt trying to come back up with their top flight unbroken run having come to an end. And I still don't think Danny Kelly has got his hands on that ticking clock.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.